We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 334. Memorial Day, everybody. Hope you're enjoying your holiday. Yankees are playing a day baseball game today. Scott, I don't know about you. I'm sunburned. I went into summer a little bit too eager. Went out and played a round of golf with my dad yesterday, and I was like, sunscreen. Screw sunscreen. Who needs that?
Didn't. This is such a rookie move.
You've been alive for... Sun one, Andrew zero.
You know, when you became a 30-year-old, you're supposed to all of a sudden be an adult and actually know that sunscreen's a real thing that you need to get older. You should you should know what happens these days.
You know what the problem is? Leanne is away this weekend.
So you're worthless.
those kind of things are just over my head. Although my mom's here, she should be helping out. I don't know.
Yeah, where was she? Where was mom? I was sunscreen. She yelled at you afterwards. She definitely gave you a lecture.
And you know what's the worst is? I don't know if you've ever had this. The top of my foot got sunburned. It wasn't from golfing. I was wearing golf shoes. But then we went to, we were just outside on the deck, and I was wearing sandals, and I just got a wicked sunburn on the top of my foot.
You can't say wicked just because you're in Rhode Island. Let's slow down on the wicked. All right.
Anyway, have you ever had a sunburn on the top of your foot? They're not fun.
So what I do is I the first time when I put sunscreen on the first application, I make sure that I hit all the areas that I hate being burned. So the top of my legs, like my knees, I hate that. It's the worst because that's, you know, where the shorts hit the next day. Can't stand that. My neck can't stand that. And then the top of my feet because I cannot stand having my feet burned. So So I don't get burned there because I don't like those spots. So I make sure I do them first.
You're a self-proclaimed medical expert, as you talk out of your ass on this podcast many, many times about.
I've had many people reach out and agree with me.
Yankees injuries. Is it possible to get a cold, like a head cold, from being sunburned? Because I think that happened to me.
I think your body is probably just having a struggle right now,
breaking down,
potentially shutting down, and the cold is just the first sign of that.
Yeah.
So you know, with my expertise. I think you probably just need some water and sleep.
That's probably true.
Yeah. I don't think you need an IL visit. I think you're just going to be fine the next day. Some fluids and a little bit of sleep. Maybe some aloe.
Tell you what, I have applied aloe. Tell you what, I have a new appreciation for Jacoby Ellsbury. That man's been through a lot. I know the body breaks down after 30. It's tough.
No, I have zero. I have nothing. I got nothing for him. Nothing for him. Because his body's not breaking down. That's the whole joke
he's
about this entire thing.
Life.
Yeah. No, he's fine. He's fly fishing in freaking Seattle or wherever the hell he is in the backwoods of Washington right now. He's not even injured. They just realized that he's terrible at baseball.
Insurance.
So all these injuries are coming up.
They're like, yeah, insurance is going to cover this. He's no longer our problem. And I'm even sorry I brought up Jacoby Ellsbury. I vow never to do that again, at least for the next few episodes. We've got Yankees are heading home. They're going to play the Padres and then that 4-game series against the Red Sox, which came up kind of fast. We were talking about it for a while that the Yankees had really no days off in May, and here they are at the end of the month, and they're about to start that homestand against the Red Sox, and it's really Thursday it kicks off, and then we have our event on Friday. All the tickets have been purchased. People have purchased all their tickets. They will be getting all of that information in their emails this week.
Yeah, so everybody's getting them this week. If you're not clear, if you haven't been to an event, all of the tickets get transferred week of, and then the QR code shows up 48 hours before the game. T-shirts are on the way. They should be showing up in mailboxes soon. I'm excited for it. Look for an email from me. You'll probably get one tonight. This is Monday, so you'll probably get one on Monday, most likely, and have all the details in there. So if you've emailed me over the past day or two with a question about the event, you can just pretty much expect an answer in the big email rather than me emailing every single person back with the same answer. So
yeah.
I'll just cover everything in that.
And then if you're not going to be able to make it to the May 31st event, check out the June 22nd event against Houston. Those tickets are on sale now, and that event is coming up fast. So get those tickets for June 22nd or July 6th.
And,
at Tampa Bay, and July 6th at Tampa Bay. If you're in Tampa, if you're in Florida, if you're in anywhere in the South, or hell, if you're in the Northeast and you want to take a trip down for 4th of July weekend to the Trop, watch the Yankees beat the snot out of the Tampa Bay Rays. Check out that as well. $69 for that event. Really, really good seats. Same sort of deal we do in the Bronx. Pre-game party, t-shirt, the whole deal. It's going to be a lot of fun. Tuesday, we have a special episode on Tuesday. So Robert Flores, Roflo, from MLB Network, he hosts the MLB Central Morning Show. I spoke with him over the weekend, and they are doing their morning show is hosting their show Wednesday morning live from Yankee Stadium. They're sort of doing an around the league tour where they take their show on the road to various stadiums. Next stop is Yankee Stadium. So I'm sure you guys have seen that show on MLB Network, but if not, check it out. It was a really fun discussion with him. We talked about pretty much all around the league, less about specifically Yankees and more about baseball in general, and sort of the what the league is facing today with some of the rule changes, some of the quote-unquote challenges that the game is facing with getting young fans engaged and all that kind of stuff. And he is an Astros fan, so I gave him a hard time about some of the Astros things. And I asked him a really challenging question.
About the Houston Astros?
About the Houston Astros, about Biggio and Bagwell. I put him on the hot seat, so look forward for that on Tuesday.
Yeah, no, Flores is a good dude. I think he's I know he used to fill in on Baseball Tonight when he was with ESPN, and then he's been doing this show on MLB Network. So, yeah, I mean, you got to talk to him over the weekend, so I'm looking forward to hearing that as well.
Good stuff. So the Yankees had a really good road trip. I think the way it ended on Sunday with the loss in extra innings definitely, you know, kind of puts a sour mood on the whole road trip. But when you look at it, 6-1 on the road trip,
it's not a sour mood. They had a hell of a road trip. It was an unbelievable comeback that was cut short by a horrible bounce to our best defender on the team. What the hell are you going to do about that? So there's really no sour taste about this. This was a hell of a road trip.
It's just a tough way to lose a game is what I'm trying to say. But what I'm saying is don't let that cloud the fact that they were 6-1 on this road trip. They finished the sweep in Baltimore like they should. like we talked about, like you should against a crappy team.
Oh, so now you're on board. Now you're on board. Now,
I've always been on board. I just don't want to jinx the team like we've done 1,000 times in the past. They get rained out on Friday, and they go into a doubleheader on Saturday, and they sweep the thing. So 4-0 in doubleheaders this year. Last year, not so hot in doubleheaders. I think we've noticed a few differences. I was talking about this today with my dad. A couple differences in this team versus last year. Last year, they struggled in doubleheaders even against bad teams. So far this year, they're 4-0, two sweeps. Last year, in a game like today, they just go down. They just die. They roll over and die, probably lose 7-2 or something like that. Not today. They came back. So
You kind of felt that they were going to come back too, just because they've done it every single. It seems like every game. I was kind of joking on Twitter, like I think sometimes the Yankees just go down so they can practice this comeback, because you know
they want to challenge themselves.
Yeah, Domingo Germán was just throwing some meatballs in there to get the offense, you know, a little bit of game time situation play for later in the season when the games actually count.
But don't you think things like there are stark differences between the 18 team and the 19 team, and that's one of them.
I mean, there's huge differences, and I think the reason why these differences are playing out is because obviously the personnel is extremely different. And right now what you have is you have a lot of these guys who are playing for a job, essentially, whether it's a starting job in one of the, you know, outfield spots if someone doesn't come back fully healthy, or, you know, Urshela when he was essentially playing for his job at third base when the Andujar injury was unknown, or you have you know, guys fighting for a utility job. You know, Voit can't let his guard down at first. I just think there's a lot of, you know, they have to put that a level of importance on every single game, every single at bat, all of these different games. These guys have something to prove. Each one of them has, you know, there's not a strong foothold in what they're going to be doing. I mean, even look at what Gleyber Torres is doing. I mean, he's on an absolute tear. And he's playing shortstop every day. But what happens when Didi's back in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, and he slides over to second base? It's just there's unknown things that are going to happen, you know? So you have to play your ass off so that you're, you know, part of the equation. I mean, obviously, Gleyber Torres is going to be part of the equation, but there are guys that, you know, may not be. Estrada is a perfect example. Like, that guy is playing his ass off and making it difficult for him to go away. Maben, same thing.
Yeah, Mabin had a really good weekend. I think the team is feeding off one another, and they believe they can come back even without the... Because no one would logically look at the roster last year and the roster this year and say, oh, last year's team can't come back. They should be able to come back in any game. They've got so much power up and down the lineup. All you have to do is get a couple guys on base, and then one swing can change the game. But it didn't seem to happen last year, or it only seemed to happen in that way. Whereas this year, it's seeming to happen in multiple ways where, yes, Gleyber hit a three-run home run today to initiate the comeback, but they also had rallies over the weekend where there wasn't a home run to be seen. I wrote it down, the rally in Game 2 on Saturday, second inning five-run rally went like this. Single, walk, single, single, double, single, hit by pitch. And then it ended, unfortunately, with a double play by Gleyber, but... Where's the home run in there? There's no home run in there. It's a five-run rally.
No, I mean it doesn't feel when you think about how they're doing all these things. You're seeing a lot of hits put together. I mean that was one of the big flaws of last year's team was they were not able to hit in big situations. The runners in scoring position was a problem. It's been a problem for the past 2 to 3 years. This year, not so much a problem. I mean they're hitting well. Clint Frazier is, you know, one of the leaders in runners in scoring position. You got LeMahieu, who's on fire when there's runners on. You got Urshela on fire when there's runners on. But you still have the long ball. I'm trying to find the tweet that someone that tweeted me over the weekend or today. That the Yankees, I didn't see the home run total until this. This is from, he's the architect on Twitter, Yankees Jets fan one. So he said to me that this year's team has hit 81 home runs after 51 games. Last year, 84 home runs after 51 games. Would you have guessed that? Because I wouldn't have.
No.
I would have guessed that, you know, maybe not significantly lower, but certainly lower than than three off that pace, because one of the biggest differences that's happening currently is that they're also getting the hit with runners in scoring position. So it's not just the long ball that's saving them. Whereas last year, those 84 home runs, you know, that was saving their ass in a lot of situations, and really not much else was happening when the guys were, in position to score.
Well, for those home run totals, we can thank the Orioles pitching.
I mean, it's absolutely true. We can thank Gleyber Torres for going on absolute, you
Gary
know,
Sanchez.
Unbelievable streaks. Yeah, and Sanchez and Voit. So
it was funny back in that Thursday game, the final game of the Baltimore series. Bundy was shutting him down, and then in the fifth inning, Frazier gets him on the board with the home run, and he had been really struggling.
Yeah.
So it's another guy who was snapped out of his funk thanks to the crappy Baltimore pitching. And the Yankees ended up taking the lead in that game, and then there was a meltdown. Holder was used for a second inning, forgot how to pitch, a couple walks, gives up a single, and then Kainley comes in and gives up a three-run bomb, and you're like, oh, are the Orioles going to take this game? Are they going to just steal this game, last game in the series? Are the Yankees going to sort of walk out of Baltimore asleep? But no, the Orioles gifted it right back to you. Here it is, Yankees on a silver platter. Let us walk in a run with the bases loaded. Thank you very much.
I mean, it was a good at-bat by Aaron Hicks, but
it's
yeah.
Classic Baltimore Orioles. I mean,
absolutely
come on.
Classic.
How incompetent
absolutely.
Can you be? Have some was, pride in yourselves.
It was perfect. I mean, I didn't really even want to get the hit to end it. I kind of wanted it to be
a wild pitch or something like that.
Yeah, because they deserved it. You know, like when you go 2-17 against the team, you deserve it. You deserve losses like that. So that is still thankfully. Thankfully, because I really thought I was in trouble when I saw all those kids there in the pregame and they were all loud and it was like weather day or whatever the hell they were doing there. They're basically trying to brainwash these kids into being Orioles fans. They had like 10,000 kids there at the stadium. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn, that's a bad omen. They were there like 2 hours before the game, cheering, getting loud. It's like there's actually people in the stands
hopped up
now
on counting candy.
Yeah, yeah. So I had a bad feeling going into that game. Like maybe this is the one that we potentially lose. And I'm like, no, what am I thinking?
Well, it's also a game that you're looking, how is Tanaka going to do after that shin injury? And
yeah,
I don't even want to call
unknown.
It an injury because he didn't miss a start. But I think it was a question. If he had gone out there and struggled and they could have blamed it on his shin, and I think most people would have been like, okay, that's understandable.
Or could have said, why is he starting? Then why didn't
right.
we just give him some more rest? Because right. there's nobody else. Yeah, there's nobody else to pitch.
It's becoming so thin.
It really is becoming thin.
The rotation and what they're going to do over the next week or two before they get some more guys back. But I really thought a big moment in that game on Thursday was Tanaka in the second inning loaded the bases and only gave up one run. I think it could have really gotten out of hand for him. Not just the game itself, but for him as in his start could have gotten really out of hand there.
No, absolutely. He stopped the bleeding in that particular case. And when you come when you blow the bases and you're playing the Orioles and only want to come across, that's a huge win because you know your team's going to score runs. Even though Bundy was shutting down the Yankees pretty much.
Into the fifth inning. Yeah, into the fifth inning, he was shutting them down.
So that's they've got some potential talent. They've got guys that they always said were going to be good. For Bundy's one of them. We've been waiting and
waiting.
How long have
you been hearing about
waiting.
Bundy?
I feel like Bundy's been around for a long time.
5-6 years at this point.
Yeah, it's been a while. And I remember hearing about him when he was in Norfolk AAA. Like, the guy's been around.
Yeah.
Zero. There's just the only pitcher that has really worked out that has come up with the Orioles. I just Jake Arrieta, who got good when
but
he
wasn't
left.
Good with them.
No, he got dominant the year he left.
Who was the lefty they traded to Seattle? And he was solid for them too. He was like sort of like a crafty lefty.
Yeah, I can see his face.
Begins with a B or an E. Eric something.
Yeah,
Eric Bedard.
Yep,
is it Bedard? Eric Bedard.
I think he was traded. Solid. I think he was traded for Adam Jones.
Well, okay. I mean, that's a good, it's a pretty solid trade.
If that was right, if I'm even remotely close to being right.
That's a fact in my mind. and Britain, I guess. He came up as a starter.
Yeah, I'm not talking about relief pitchers, but yeah. Right. There just haven't been very many good starting pitchers at Baltimore for a long time.
Mike Mussina.
Yeah, maybe that's the last one.
Hap looked a lot better in the first game on Saturday. He struck out 10 guys, and he was really back to the old Jay Hap through 5 innings. He made a big mistake to Merrifield. He just missed a location. It was a 3-run home run to tie the game. But 10 strikeouts, he was using his fastball a lot. So kind of looking at it, okay, how is Hap going to – we spent like 10 minutes on the last episode talking about how is Hap going to evolve as a pitcher? How is he going to change something up because clearly this isn't working? Well, he didn't really change anything up. It just kept doing what he's doing, and it worked.
Pretty much, I mean, that was my conclusion at the end of it. You can't reinvent yourself in the middle of a season like this as a guy who doesn't have diminished stuff. Like we were talking about how you brought up CeCe or, you know, Pettit. Well, they had diminished stuff. Their fastball velocity was down. They couldn't do the same things they did earlier in their career, and they had to, you know, come up with a different pitch to be able to get guys out. Hap's not that. That's not what's happening right now. His fastball still has velocity on it. The velocity that he's had pretty much the majority of his career. But he just hasn't been throwing strikes. And when you're not working with your number one pitch and it's going over the plate, then you have problems, especially if it's a fastball. So he was mixing the two seam in, you know, maybe it was a little bit more frequently, but he was spotting that four seam fastball. And if he's spotting the four seam fastball, you know, he's going to be effective. So I don't know if there was any kind of a mechanical change or just some kind of a mental approach and the way that they attacked or a pace or something like that. Like, to me, it's probably something very small and you know, relatively insignificant to most people when they're thinking or seeing him.
Well, at what point do we start to say, well, maybe he just can't pitch against Baltimore for some reason?
I refuse to.
I know it doesn't make any
logical reason.
I know, but you take out his Baltimore starts and he's got an ERA like 3.8, so that's more like the J-Hap that the Yankees signed up for, right? Solid 6 innings, and it's being skewed by the fact that he's been absolutely dreadful in 4 Baltimore starts.
I think that there is a coincidence level that he struggled as much as he has against Baltimore. Again, the thing is, before the reason I first went with, and I still think this is a very big reason, is when you're a fastball pitcher and that's your number one effective pitch and you're not able to locate that, any major league team who sees you multiple times is going to have more success off of you because you can't throw your fastball, which is your dominant pitch, for a strike consistently. That's a problem. So all they're doing is looking for a specific zone and that ball to leak over the plate. And they're crushing it. So I think that plays a lot into what it was. I don't think it mattered what team it was. I think it would have been any team. Could have been much worse if it was another team, if it was a team that had better talent. But the fact is they faced him a bunch of times, and he's a fastball guy who wasn't able to throw his fastball for strikes. That's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's what you have to say, because like we just said, it logically there's no reason why he would just struggle against Baltimore.
So there's no reason. That's absolutely a coincidence, and or because of the repetition, the amount of times they've seen him. There's a lot of
four times already, and it was four times two a times lot of eyeballs in the first week. On a
bad fastball.
Yeah, and another thing I love about this team is the Yankees give up the lead, and then immediately in the next inning, they come right back and take the game. Voit, 470-foot bomb.
That thing was a shot.
I was listening to Sterling during the call, and you know how you can tell when it's a real shot. It is high, it is far. He gets a little extra pep in his step, but then when he sees where the ball lands,
yeah, he goes nuts.
He goes nuts, and Susan gives out a little like,
yeah,
it's an audible moan. It's like, oh,
it's a groan.
It's a groan. It's a grown woman groan, and it was great. It was great to hear. And
then they both have like a chuckle or like a laugh over it, and the laugh is just like a monster, like a haw. I don't even know what the sound is, but it's not human.
You can't replicate the sound, but you know it when you hear it.
Yeah, it's a very, very distinct sound.
It's the Susan sound. It's the one and only Susan Waldman sound. Are we done with the Chad Green opener yet? It's twice.
I'm just done with the opener situation. Totally.
I mean,
general.
Maybe next time we're gonna have another.
David Hale might be pitching tomorrow, right? I think that's. Last I was looking, what these guys were talking about, that he's probably going to go tomorrow.
They still haven't announced anybody, right?
Since we started recording, they have not announced anybody. But yeah, it's. I mean, they're dealing with so many of these injuries now that they're going to be piecing things together. And
that's okay.
We've seen Chance Adams now go, like, I don't know if we were talking about this before we started recording or in the beginning of the show, but Chance Adams very well might have earned a spot, whether it's staying on the team or being brought up to the team as a long relief guy or coming back up for a spot start.
That's what I want to talk about, because he gave him four innings, three runs, but I think Gardner definitely should have caught that ball in center field. That's a ball Gardner catches 99 out of 100 times.
He just lost it.
And that's a run right there. I don't know how that's not an error, frankly, but they gave him a double.
Because it's not an error. They can't make it an error. It's just one of those things.
It went off his glove.
I'm thinking of the other one that he lost, because he had two plays. Yeah, no, you're my bad. That should have been an error. There's no doubt.
The one that
wasn't named an error. It wasn't called an error.
No, because all of Adams' runs were earned.
Yeah. No, that makes no sense. Maybe just because of the distance he ran, but no, he definitely catches that ball.
I mean, it could also be a home scoring situation where the home scorer is just generous to the home team.
No, because there were two situations with Gardner, and the second one was he just lost the ball in the sky. The ball went up, and
talking about that one.
Didn't know where it was, and then
it's the run scoring plays for him, where Gardner with the ball and then Frazier on the ball in the corner, which that's a tough play. It's certainly a tough play, but he looks kind of lost in right field. And there was another error today where he was running over towards the foul line, and the ball just went off of his glove. He seems very hesitant running towards the right field corner and the wall.
Well, I think a lot of it does have to play with the fact that the Kansas City Stadium, whatever the hell it's called now, David Cohen called it like five things on the broadcast the other day, Kauffman Stadium, Royals Stadium at Kauffman Field, whatever the hell it's called. But it's a big outfield, and it's got a lot of distance to cover, both left, right, center. It's just a big outfield. So Frazier definitely looked uncomfortable. Definitely looked like on that ball going back to the wall in the right corner, you could tell that he didn't know where the wall was and he was feeling for it. Whereas he could have, run to the ball
7 or 8 feet from the wall.
So. Yeah, he was a good amount away. So he had room to make the play. He just again was not aware of the field, the surroundings.
But we saw it at Yankee Stadium too, going into the corner and towards right center field wall.
You know, maybe some of it is a little bit of hesitancy with him and the head injury that he
doesn't
want to take a big spill.
But he also doesn't look as good in right field as he does in left. Not that he's a tremendous left fielder, but he does look a lot more instinctual in left field than he does in right field.
I mean, I think he's looked pretty bad everywhere so far this year. He just has not. He doesn't look like he has instincts for the outfield right now. He's got and the other thing is the communication, because there was another play today where he was going out and LeMahieu was playing second. And there was a miscommunication, and Frazier should have caught the ball, should have been his ball the whole way. He should have just called it and run to the ball, because it's your ball. And he didn't. And then he, made a little diving catch thing at the end and caught it, thankfully. But But it was just one of those situations where, you know, the communication wasn't there. He should have taken control of that situation and he didn't.
Why do you
and
think?
Then, and then the next play, I think it was the next play or the next inning. I think it was in the same inning, actually. LeMahieu's like halfway to center field. Just like, I got this, like screaming, like Clint back. Clint, I got it. I got it. And then catches the ball.
So. Why do you think they're playing Frazier and Wright a lot and maybe in left field, in at least over the weekend?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're trying to get Clint more outfield experience, I think, in the different spots, because it's going to be, if he can only play left field, then it's going to be harder to keep him on the team. Not when you look at what he's doing on the at the plate with his bat, it's near impossible to get rid of him, to send him down, in my opinion.
But, well, it depends. If you got a full outfield healthy, do you want Frazier as the backup outfielder or do you want Maben? Because what are you looking for then out of a fourth? Really, in that case, it would be a fourth and a half outfielder, because if you have Stanton, Judge, Hicks, and Gardner all healthy, yes, there's a DH in there, but Gardner is really the next outfielder up.
I mean, he would be a fourth. I mean, we've had Hicks when we've had a rotation of five guys and they all play. So I think that there's room for I have to look at what the it's so right now, like there are so many people coming
so
back
jumbled in my
and
head.
Knowing what is there now and like who the 25th man is today and not tomorrow, but there's going to be a coming up to the trade the All-Star break right before it, most likely there's going to be a lot of decisions if everybody does come back, because it seems like they're all kind of circling around this All-Star break. Like end of June is when we're looking at a lot of these guys potentially coming back, or maybe just after the All-Star break. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they mix and match, and if they keep another bullpen guy, or if they're taking another utility fielder, someone who can play the. I mean, Estrada now can play. He's played the outfield in the past. Can he play it as well or better than Frazier?
Well, that's the thing. I think you're right that they're trying to get Frazier more experience and testing him in different spots to see what they can get out of him.
Yeah.
He hasn't looked good, but he is hitting pretty well, but so is Maben. And I would never say, oh, you have to keep Cameron Maben over Clint Frazier. But they need to decide at a certain point, what does this roster need? And is Clint Frazier, who's shaky in the outfield, helping them off the bench in that situation? I don't know if he is.
I mean, I think his bat, because again, if you're a fourth outfielder, you're going to play almost every day. You're going to play a lot, because especially when Judge does come back, Stanton does come back, like these guys are going to be playing. They're going to be rotating through the DH spot. That's happening.
I think Judge is such a long way away, though. So I think it's a moot point.
Oh, I don't think Judge is. I think Judge is a lot closer. From listening to what they were saying today, it sounded like he was actually closer than I was expecting, to tell you the truth. He was throwing a lot today, throwing from further distance. And when they go home, apparently he's going to be, you know, hitting off of a tee and start swinging a bat. So when he was talking with Meredith today, they sat down and had a little one-on-one. He sounded pretty confident, to tell you the truth. Like, I'm just kind of reading the language and what he's saying. It sounds like he's going to be swinging like next week or this coming week.
And we'll all see how it goes. If it goes well, then yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's end of June. But I still think they're not going to rush him. And I think it's going to be
Going to rush him. But the thing is, if he does not, if that oblique is not hurting, and from what he was saying, it doesn't, and he can swing without any pain and feel it in any way, then I think they're just going to get this rehab going. You have 20 days, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're that far off.
And with
Didi, on the other hand,
he's back tomorrow. He might not even take the full rehab. You see that?
For Scranton, yeah, he's getting pushed up to Scranton at some point.
Right, but he might not even need to take the full rehab. No. It might not take him the full time.
No, it won't take him the full time. He's Didi Gregorius. He's a fucking knight.
rotation, like we were talking about. So CeCe's having his knee drained. He's going to miss at least one start. Could be more. Paxton, 3 weeks max. Remember 3 weeks max? Do you know what the date was on 3 weeks max? May 25th. We're recording. It's May 26th. So now as you are listening to this, it's May 27th. What happened to 3 weeks max, Scott?
We shit on that three weeks max as soon as they said it.
Yep.
As soon as they said it, I'm like, why are you doing that? This is a guy that has injury history, doesn't heal well. He has no Didi Gregorius in the healing part, or much less anything else in life. Who knows? I mean, who the hell is?
Well, it might not be that far away, but I think the 3 weeks max just was a stupid statement. Why? I don't know. And we said it at the time. So right now they're without Sabathia and without Paxton, which is why I think you could see Chance Adams getting a start or more time with an opener situation. If they do another opener, I don't want to see Chad Green open again. They've tried it twice. Let's try someone else next time. Cortez also looked good today.
Cortez looked really good today and then came out in a big inning when they...
Which was madness. Madness. Why they brought him out after they tied the game and it worked. And then they bring in Holder with arrested Britton, arrested Otto, and Canely. They could all have pitched. And they didn't choose to go to any of those guys.
So when I saw him, come back out, I was like, "Oh, okay, getting greedy here." This guy. I mean, he looked good against the Royals. He was mixing it up quite a bit, and they were not getting any good contact off of him. So why not throw him out there again? I'm fine bringing him back out. Like that wasn't the problem for me.
I was not fine with it.
But then he got two strikes because I'm not looking at names. I'm looking at what they're doing. I don't even look at names anymore because it doesn't matter because everybody's playing well. So when you're out there and you get the first two guys, you're like, okay, here we go. Still fooling guys, still going. Then there's a single. You're like, okay, let's give him one more at bat. Another single.
No one was warming up.
This is when I'm having someone warm, ready to go. So first sign of trouble.
Someone warm already.
Yeah. Oh no, absolutely. First sign of trouble, ready to go. But that was not the case. But he did get out of it.
So. He got out of it. Yeah. And Holder, let's be real. Should not have given up the game there. It was a bad hop.
It was a bad hop. I mean, it was a terrible hop. Gio Urshela almost got his head knocked off because the ball popped up, and it was just an unfortunate bounce. You know, what are you going to do about that? Yeah. That's baseball, Susan. You move on. You got to love the fight. You love the comeback that they made because, you know, especially with Aaron Hicks doing it, like I love seeing Aaron Hicks locked in and, you know, just a rip single going the other way and scoring two. It was a great ninth inning.
They fought back from a really, really bad Herman start, worst of the season. He gave up four bombs, yeah. Four home runs,
right.
A lot of mislocations. The big three run homer was to Maldonado, hanging curveball in the middle of the plate.
Yeah, that was the first one.
Yeah, first one.
Yeah, that was a meatball. He let up a couple more back to back that you could tell were just a frustrated. It was like a Sonny Gray special. You know, the next pitch is gone.
But we sort of started to see that last start out against Baltimore, where he pitched five innings, didn't look great, but it was a blowout win, so they got him out of the game in a relatively early manner. Now today, five innings, nine hits, seven runs, four homers allowed. Is he starting to run out of gas? Are we starting to see a little bit of a regression? Is this just a guy in his first really major league action having to now figure something out as he goes?
I think there's a potential of all of the above.
All
I mean,
of
this,
the above, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's a guy that needed to take that next step and getting deeper into games. We're seeing that he's going to be throwing more. He's throwing more consistently in the major leagues than he ever has from the same position. I mean, he's come in relief in the past, but now he is a starting pitcher in a major role on this team. So he's got, you know, a little bit of weight on his shoulders, especially now too, with with CC down, with Paxton down, like they're relying on him. So I think when you're coming out and he's not as sharp on certain days, he's got to deal with that and he's got to learn to deal with that. So yeah, there's a potential for all of the above. I mean, you can't expect a guy to just have it every single day. You know, now what we want to see is how he bounces back from this. I think that's going to be the next telling thing on the Domingo Herman progression as a major league pitcher, and I think we've seen so much of it, and he's made good adjustments. So, you know, unless there is some kind of a fatigue thing or some kind of a tiredness or a mechanical issue, you expect him to make an adjustment and fight back.
And he's, I think, in line to pitch the Friday night game we're at.
Perfect.
Right. That's good. Five days.
Is it? Yeah, I haven't done the math. It's a lot of math to do.
Monday,
in my head
Tuesday,
right,
Wednesday,
now.
Thursday, Friday.
Sweet. I would love to see Herman that day. That'd be great.
So I think with the rotation how it is, with Sabathia out and then Herman possibly starting to hit a little bit of a speed bump, it's key. They need to start getting guys back and healthy in that rotation. And I know that we actually have a mailbag question about if the Yankees could trade for somebody, but we're almost at the MLB draft, so it'll be really interesting to see if they pounce on Keuchel right after the draft.
Yeah, it will be. It'll be interesting to see what happens and what he's going to get, because it seems like he's going to sign after that draft no matter what, you know, with whatever team he's going to be going to.
And how soon will he be ready after that draft?
Again, like, I don't expect him to be long because he's keeping healthy. Same with Gio. He'll be ready soon. So I think that's a non-issue. The fact is that there's potentially going to be a bidding war for him at this point, the way it is. And I don't know, you know, I think it's going to be a shorter contract, but he's probably going to get probably close to the AAV he wants. It'll just be, you know, maybe his AAV is going up because it's going to be potentially a 1-year deal, you know, yeah. or just the rest of the season,
but it's
and they will prorate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like. And yeah, I guess everybody's kind of waiting to after the draft at this point. Why not? No one else is pouncing in there. It'll be interesting though, because I think what he does too will also dictate. We may see some early trades. We kind of saw some last year that came a little earlier than normal for the trade deadline. But the fact that there are two guys out there on the free agent market with Kimbrel and Keuchel that are relatively top level. I mean, Kimbrel for sure, top level pitching additions to a team. You may see some shifting around with trades as well to compete with those free agents.
Competing, and also teams can use them as bargaining and leverage chips.
Right.
Because instead of being held to the fire by teams that are selling off pieces, the other team on the other side can say, hey, I don't need to trade for your guy. I don't need to give up assets for you. I can just go out and sign someone. So
yeah, it's a different dynamic than we've had in the past with two big names on the free agent market ready to join a team.
And if they do and it succeeds, I wonder if we see more of it in the future.
Yeah, usually trends that work out will repeat themselves.
The voyeur, right? The term, the voyeur?
I don't know what the term is, but I can tell you that if Keuchel walks in and gets a evaluation of 17 or higher for the rest of the season prorated, then you're going to see some of these guys potentially doing that.
Well, that's what he turned down from the Astros.
Well, I mean, that was a full 17, so yeah, there's still money left on the table, but that's why if he goes up in AAV, you know, for the total contract, and then you prorate it, it'll just be interesting to see, because it's going to be a bargaining chip for them as well. But guys that are not getting the money that they want, and they know that this is, you know, going to be a potential, and you can kind of see who's going to be good, you know, year in and year out, more or less, to see, you know, maybe this guy or this team will need a starting pitcher at some point. So.
I tweeted out a poll from at Yankees podcast this week after Urshela got a big two out RBI single, and I said if you had to pick one guy with two outs and runners in scoring position on the Yankees, Gio Urshela or DJ LeMahieu, who would you pick? And 2,500 people voted, 57% for LeMahieu. But for a while, I want to say for the first 1,000 or 1,200 votes, that thing was neck and neck, 50-50, and it was probably because Urshela had just come through with a hit. But these are the two guys.
You can say that every day.
These are the two guys. When you look up their stats, so entering Sunday, Urshela with runners in scoring position in 37 plate appearances, .412 batting average. And you want a little brain buster, Scott? Here's a little baseball nerdy stat for you. He has a .412 batting average and a .405 on base percentage in those situations.
That's crazy.
Do you understand that?
I understand that he gets on base a lot, and a lot of it is because he's doing it with a hit.
But it's less.
What is, it's less. So
his
the batting on-base average,
percentage is lower than his batting average.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know why?
Because he is not taking very many walks.
He has two sacrifice flies. And sacrifice flies negatively impact your on-base percentage, but do not impact your batting average. Mm. So it's just one of those weird baseball stat things. And then he's hitting .500 with two outs and runners in scoring position. LeMahieu, 50 plate appearances with runners in scoring position, .439 batting average, .469 on base percentage, 19 RBIs. And then with two outs in those situations, .400 batting average. Like all of these numbers are insane. Like when you see a four or a five in a batting average, it's just insane that they're coming through at this rate.
And they both came through again today. We're recording on Sunday in the ninth inning. Both of them got hits. They both got on and set the table for Aaron Hicks to tie the game with a big hit. So didn't let it down. Didn't let down one bit. So who would you take of the two?
I voted in my own poll and I voted for LeMahieu.
Okay. I mean, I would definitely take LeMahieu.
Yeah. Urshela's been fantastic, but I still, when I watch Urshela up there, every time he gets a hit with runners in scoring position, I'm still slightly surprised. I'm like, oh, okay, he's still doing it. He's still doing the damn thing, Gio Urshela. When LeMahieu gets a hit, and I'm like, yeah, I knew LeMahieu was going to get a hit.
LeMahieu just gives it to you every time. Urshela, you're just like, yeah, you're in amazement still.
As far as two outs with runners in scoring position, though, 500 versus 400.
Yeah.
Although more plate appearances for LeMahieu in those situations.
LeMahieu is just the consummate pro.
The at-bat quality for both of them in those clutch spots are just of the highest level.
And today with Urshela's hit, I mean, LeMahieu was a no-doubter, just ripped a single. But Urshela, it was a hell of a piece of hitting and, you know, snuck it past the second baseman. It's just a good piece of hitting, man. It's just the guy has turned into a disciplined batter who can cover the entire plate and hit some bad balls, too. I mean, we're seeing him, you know, go out of the strike zone and hit balls for, that find some green. So he just continues to impress and amaze.
You excited for this San Diego Padres, the whale's vagina?
I can't say that I'm excited for like the Padres specifically. I'm
interleague play doesn't get you a little juiced up still. Maybe in the 90s.
In the 90s it was cool because it never happened. So you see them,
and there was no MLB TV and everything where you could just flip on a Padres game if you really wanted to watch a Manny Machado at bat.
I mean, growing up, I thought I still like this. I still like the fact that when back in the day. When you meet in the World Series, it's the first time you see each other. I think that's awesome.
See, I wasn't old enough to actually witness that.
Yeah,
by the time
I did, and that
was
fun.
Really old enough to watch baseball.
I don't remember what year what year did they start that?
Wasn't interleague play after the strike?
So 94.
I'm talking out of my ass. I think so.
The strike was
the strike was definitely 94 into 95,
right.
And I think interleague play started after that. That was one of the things that they came back after. Or maybe it was after expansion, so early 90s. I think when they expanded, that's
when the Marlins and the Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
No, I think it was when the Rockies came in, and then when the Brewers moved to the NL.
Right.
Anyway.
All right. It was better.
There's people yelling at us at home. So we could each look this up right now.
If we could.
I'm way too
sunburned. But it's Memorial Day weekend, and it's been a long... I mean, we're lucky that we're standing right now, actually recording this with the amount of things that have happened this weekend. So,
yeah.
But no, as far as the Padres specifically, the Manny Machado circus is coming into town. That's what we're gonna expect, right? Mm-hmm. Thank God Gio Urshela exists, because can you imagine?
Yes. Then
what would be happening right now as the Padres, the San Diego Padres, are coming into town with Andujar hurt, mm-hmm. and us playing.
If they had
Tyler
been,
Wade at third base.
Right, if they're scrapping for a third baseman and Andujar is hurt, it would have been a shit show.
Right. So I'm very grateful for Gio Urshela, specifically for that reason.
Urshela should get an extended roll call, an extended applause this week.
He should. And, you know, I wondered leading up to this series if there was any added pressure on him, you know, just knowing that Machado was coming in with the whole circus around it. But I really don't think so, because, you know, when Andujar went down for the surgery and he ended up, you know, getting the surgery. It was Gio Urshela was never part of that whole mix. It didn't even exist in this conversation. So he's just the new guy that showed up and started dominating. And like, you know, he doesn't care about the old names.
Interleague play started in 1997.
Okay. We weren't far off.
The Padres are having an okay year. They're second in their division, 3 games over .500, but they have a -10 run differential. I think it's interesting, and I actually kind of talked about this with Robert Flores, Roflo, on the episode tomorrow, but they scratched Paddock, who's their best pitcher, young pitcher. He's been compared to Roger Clemens in certain instances. He was supposed to start Sunday against Toronto. They moved him to Wednesday against the Yankees. I think that's telling for what the Padres are expecting out of this series, expecting out of Paddock in the long run. You move your young stud to the bright lights of Yankee Stadium, I think that's telling.
And Wednesday's a national game, right? I assume it is.
It's an afternoon game, but MLB Network, because their show is covering it live from the stadium, so it's definitely a big spotlight.
So they're moving him into the spotlight. The San Diego Padres have an opportunity now to show their best players on the national stage against the New York Yankees, and now they're putting their young gun up against this team. So yeah, I mean, it makes sense. That definitely came from the top down. They're like, we want our best guy, our best young guy. The guy that they're comparing to this another Hoss from Texas, like Nathan Eovaldi, you know, and Roger Clemens and Nolan Ryan, all these guys that are coming from, you know, eating lots of beef in Texas. We want him on the national stage to go against the New York Yankees. So it makes a lot of sense.
And who do you think catches Tanaka on Tuesday? It's a night game. Tanaka Tuesday will be a night game after a day game.
After a day game on Monday because it's Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm. So we're not going to get a day game after a night game situation. Is actually flipped reverse. And I could actually see Romine catching tomorrow because Monday, as you're speaking Monday, Romine catching because the Yankees played a day game, Sanchez caught, and then they're flying, and then it's a quick turnaround with a day game. So I think if Gary Sanchez does not catch Tanaka on Tuesday, I think we have a personal catcher situation on our hands, and you people can look forward to me ranting on Thursday's episode.
How can we? I just don't even understand how you could like have a personal catcher at this point with three starting pitchers. Like, seriously, how does this even work?
All I know is that'll be three starts in a row, and they've had the ex machina excuse, right? It's just day game after a night game, ex machina. They could just write it off. That's the reason. But now I think if it happens on Tuesday again, we got ourselves a situation, people.
Tanaka's been really good over his last five starts, too.
And watch him go out and get crushed, and then we definitely have a personal catcher situation.
So I think that there's not going to be a personal catcher situation because I think the scenario that you just laid out is probably very likely.
Romine catching Monday?
Yes, I could see them catching Romine on Monday because of the travel, because of the day game today, and, you know, the fact that they need Gary Sanchez and Tanaka to get work together as well. I mean, like, that has to happen because it's going to happen during the season, especially now. There was a conversation at one point, right, when we're talking about Gary Sanchez and there's a personal catcher situation, but we have to have Gary Sanchez bat in the lineup. Well, last year, Gary Sanchez wasn't hitting the ball as well. And if you're talking about a personal catcher situation, Romine's coming in and, you know, all the Romanites are applauding because he's actually doing better than he had offensively. I mean, he's having this quote breakout year offensively, and he's an offensive juggernaut. So are we losing the bat? Like there were those people talking about that. But now, I mean, Gary Sanchez is back healthy. Offense is, you know, flowing from his from every orifice of his body. He's just crushing the ball.
Except in the ninth inning on Sunday.
So you need him there. You need him behind the plate.
We have a couple mailbag questions. I first want to talk because we were just talking about Machado and the Padres. So this is from a few weeks back. I saw Brian Hoke tweet that the Yankee Stadium blooper video that they do in between innings had a video of Manny Machado running away with a $300 million check. I have not seen this video. I've not seen footage.
I've seen the video.
You've seen the video.
I've seen the video because I didn't see it at the game, but I've seen it because he's been doing this like feud with their mascot. It's been like a thing.
Okay. So I don't think this is a troll on the Yankees' part.
So here's the thing. Like, was that video, I mean, did they play that alone or was it in a reel of bloopers?
All I know, it was in the reel of bloopers is what I saw.
So I think some of those are put out by Major League Baseball, by MBAM.
Yankees or Yankee Stadium.
So I think MBAM
takes away some of the juice from it.
Yeah. I mean, I know you want the juice. I don't know. I'm sorry. I know you want the juice. I know you want the juice. I'm not trying to take away your juice.
Can we play this like the Yankees are trolling Machado?
There's a possibility that the Yankees are trolling Manny Machado because now they have Gio Urshela starting, having better numbers, playing defensively like Manny Machado, maybe better. Who knows? I don't know what the defensive metrics look like compared.
Does Manny Machado catch that bad hopper today?
Not a chance. Might hit him in the head. The fact that Gio got out of the way of that ball, miracle.
But is Machado a little bit taller than Urshela, so maybe it hits him in the head and it stays in the infield? And then
he's a little bigger, but I don't think he's that much bigger. Yeah. We need to, for Thursday's episode, we absolutely need to go line by line. and see what Gio Urshela is beating Manny Machado in. And I think we're all going to be very surprised. It's going to be a lot of numbers that he's going to be exceeding Machado in.
Machado's having an okay year. He's hitting .267 with a .350 on-base percentage, 9 home runs, 116 OPS plus, and a 1.4 WAR.
Okay.
You're not. I mean, it's not.
It doesn't sound like anything I would pay. I would pay. I wouldn't give that a 10-year contract.
It's not $300 million plus. But when you look at Urshela, .333 batting average.
Average. Here we go. Let's use it. It works. It plays. Let's use it. Run it.
.387 on base percentage. There's another win column. 126 OPS plus. That's a 10-point increase over Manny Machado. Fewer home runs. Fewer RBIs. And a lower WAR. 0.7.
Also fewer at bats, I have to assume.
I mean they've both been pretty much everyday players though.
Yeah, but Urshela had a little bit of a he wasn't playing every day from the beginning of the season.
Another tidbit from inside the Yankee Empire, which I finished towards the end, they sort of did a post with us. They did a sit down with Brian Cashman about 2 weeks after the season ended. And one of the topics was Machado and Harper. And they were very cryptic about Cashman's opinion on Machado and Harper. They just said one of the quotes was, "I don't like his antics," but they wouldn't say who he was talking about.
I bet he's talking about Bryce Harper.
Okay.
Because I don't think Machado has antics.
But this was during the World Series that they were talking to him, so it was
I don't think that matters. I think that Bryce Harper's antics are well known. I think he's a little bitch, a little crybaby. That's what I think. I mean, yeah, the guy can hit the ball a mile, and he's fun to watch. He's not having a great season. I mean, they're definitely not. I think they're disappointed into so far what he's done. But
I'd probably say both are disappointed so far in the production.
It's going to be very difficult to live up to that money, in all honesty. So there's always going to be that
once you sign. See, that's
that cloud hovering
over
you.
Once you sign that kind of money, it's sort of MVP level production or bust.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. But Bryce Harper's had antics. I mean, the Machado situation that they're talking about, where, you know, whether it's him talking about the Johnny Hustle thing or the weird thing at first base, I don't think people buy into that as him having antics. I don't think people in baseball buy into it.
Yeah. We have one mailbag question that I want to talk about. If you guys want to submit mailbag questions, go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. You can also tweet us at Yankees Podcast on Twitter or at Bronx Pinstripes at Twitter. We have not plugged our personal Twitter handles in quite some time, Scott, so why don't you go ahead and plug yours?
Mine is my first and last name, Scott Reinen, at Scott Reinen, R-E-I-N-E-N.
And mine is my name with an underscore in the middle of it. Because
there you go, because he can't trust you.
Because I changed my Twitter handle about 3 years in after using it, and then there was already another Andrew Rotondi who's tweeted like 27 times.
Have you tried get it from him?
I've tweeted him like 4 times. I'm like, hey man, you want
to
trade?
Maybe you need to find him on
three of his like 30 tweets are to me just being like, nah, man.
Oh, he's responded.
Yeah. Uh-oh. He's like, nah, I'm good. So
you need to put up a little something.
Andrew underscore Rotondi on Twitter if you want to submit mailbag questions, or join the Facebook group, the Bronx Pinstripe Show in Facebook. A lot of good Yankees talk going on in there. One question is from Scott, not you, a different Scott. He says, do we think the rule changes made before the season have made an impact? So the 2019 rule changes were, we know the DL is now the IL. There's now 5 mound visits instead of 6. I don't think that's really made an impact. I know the Rays ran out of didn't the Rays run out of them one game against the Yankees?
I don't recall. I haven't heard much about it as far as I don't remember it being a problem in any game.
And because it's not, it sort of flew under the radar. I wouldn't surprise me if we go down to 4 next year.
But the thing is, so this was one of those we were talking. This was I guess last year when we had him on. But Scott Braun, also an MLB Network guy, I had the conversation with him when we talked last year, and one of his big things is he's like, I agree to him to an extent. Like the rules for the catchers, the mound visits, we're not going to feel that as much during the regular season. Where we will feel it more, and it didn't really play out that way in the playoffs, but I could see it being more of an issue in the playoffs, when there's a lot more on the line on every situation. And now they have to start counting these visits and they're not able to go out there as many times. There's going to be different situations. That's when I think we could feel it more.
And I think it's also plays mind games too. It's like if a catcher, if they're reserving mound visits and they could go out and talk to him, but they don't, then that could be in the back of the mind of the pitcher and they could be second guessing themselves.
Yeah, I think there's also like ways around this too. I think in the middle of an inning, you know, when they're on the bench, or they could game plan this ahead of time where there could be a cue where, you know, you want to slow somebody down and go talk to them. The third baseman could walk over, say a couple words, slow the pace down, something like that. Like, I think there's probably other ways for them to do what they need to do for visits that aren't essential. Because how many times have we seen a mound visit just to slow something down, just to like, let's take a breather for a minute. Or, you know, you have a pitching coach pop out.
Well, now it seems like a lot of the mound visits, they're strictly for signs.
Right. And a lot of times it's with a guy on second base.
And before, when there were no limits on him, it was just to kill time or settle or do a mental
reset. Yeah, that's
what
I'm saying. And you can still do that. It just doesn't need to be the catcher. I mean, literally a third baseman can walk in and, you know, do the glove over the face thing and just give him an extra breather.
That counts as a mound visit.
The third baseman? No, it doesn't.
I believe no one can visit the mound.
I know,
anybody,
but he can step off
the mound.
He can step off of the mound, and they can have a discussion. That's not a mound visit.
Okay,
I'm gonna look this up, but I don't think it is. It shouldn't be.
You look that up as I'm talking about.
I don't even know how the hell I'm gonna look this up.
I got it. Inning breaks have been supposedly shortened. So the actual letter of the law says, subject to discussions with broadcast partners, inning breaks will be reduced from 2:05 to 2 minutes in local games, and from 2:25 to 2 minutes in national games. So supposedly the inning breaks have been shortened, which would overall reduce the time. I still don't think there's been much reduction in overall time of games, so haven't really felt the impact there. And then this next and final rule, we won't really notice until later in the season, and that's that there's only one trade deadline now. The waiver trade period is eliminated. It's just July 31st trade deadline.
I think that's a big deal. I think that's gonna, and I think that's gonna play into what we saw with the, or what we're seeing now with the free agents too left on. I think this whole free agent, or I'm sorry, this whole trade deadline, this year in 2019 is gonna feel different, I think, than we have seen it in years past, because we're not gonna see those waiver moves. We're not gonna see the, you know, we're gonna see
the Justin Verlander like last minute on midnight on the August deadline.
Yeah. No, it's dumb. It's a ridiculous. I'm glad that they did this. I think this needs to happen. I think that they need to impose a deadline in the offseason.
It's kind of confusing too, right?
I think it's going to come too.
It was confusing. There's a trade deadline, but you can acquire players after the trade deadline. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, you just got to do it under stupid MLB loophole rules.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. There's definitely. I think it's a good adjustment to the game. Again, like I said, I think they're going to do it in the offseason too, just to make sure that they can move things along and that they want to avoid. They don't want Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell to be sitting on the sidelines right now. They want those guys to be out with a team playing baseball. That MLB doesn't win when those guys are sitting on the couch.
That's a black mark on baseball. If
absolutely.
Kimbrell and Keuchel don't play baseball this year.
And I think that if you have a deadline in, you know, the beginning of January at some point, or middle of January, that you probably see both of those guys sign, because nobody's rolling the dice. Nobody can wait it out. There's not a, you know, as much of a, you know, a game of chicken happening at that point. So I think that you see a lot less of that nonsense and guys getting signed. So
you get anything on the mound visits?
I'm still reading. I'm seeing catchers and pitcher. I'm not seeing anything about a third baseman.
All right, so 2020, we're going to get a few more rules. There's going to be active roster provisions, so you have to designate if a guy is a pitcher or a position player. Obviously, there's a loophole in if there's a blowout game or extra innings that you can still use a pitcher to pitch. Go ahead.
If a player leaves his position to discuss strategy with a pitcher after an offensive substitution, it is not count as a mound visit. The rules also allow a visit if the umpire determines the pitcher has misunderstood the catcher's signs. So there's a lot of loopholes with this bullshit too.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't.
We haven't seen that one yet where it's like, oh, that wasn't real, a mound visit. We're misinterpreting. Like, how many fingers did you hold up? You don't have the whiteout on the fingernails. You know, Posada used to do the whiteout on the fingernails.
But let me ask you a question. How many times are we noticing that?
I've never noticed that.
No, but I mean, even if it did happen and the mound visit number stayed at 2, that or stayed at 3 left or whatever the hell it would be.
The difference.
We would never have even noticed it. And I guarantee the broadcast wouldn't have noticed it either.
Yeah.
I don't know. You got to be really looking for that. We're all trained not to even notice that number at this point.
I just think if MLB is really concerned about pace of play, these little minute details with mound visits and all this 5 seconds being shaved off inning, like, that's not going to do it. There's going to be bigger changes than these sorts of things to really speed up the games.
Well, I think the biggest thing, like, we were, I think that when we talked about this, I'm trying to remember when we did this. Maybe it was in the offseason this year or last year before they brought these up. But the time in between the innings is one of the big areas where they can shave time off of the bottom line.
5 seconds doesn't do jack shit.
No, I know that.
Give me a minute off.
But that's where it is. But you could shave time off there and then show
18
ads.
Minutes.
Right.
If you take a minute off in each inning break, 18 minutes. 18 minutes is a significant amount of time.
Absolutely.
So if you come back after a minute of
the national games, though, the national games, there was more than a 5 second. There was a pretty significant time.
25 seconds.
Okay. Now we're starting to get somewhere.
But it's still 2 minutes. No, it's still 2 minutes.
But the thing is they can now supplement these ads with on-screen graphics. They're doing it already.
I'd be totally cool with that.
Yeah.
As the guy is warming up and or whatever. Like, yeah.
There's ways to do it. Still.
As the guy is walking up from the all these downtimes in the games where after a batter gets out, and then the next guy is walking up, adjusting his batting gloves, there's 10 seconds you can filter in an ad.
Why don't they sell the ad spots for every single replay? When these jackasses are going in there, it's the Charles Schwab replay booth. You know?
Well, they already do that kind of stuff.
They do it in football. They don't really do. They don't do it in baseball.
You remember the movie Spaceballs?
Do I remember the movie Spaceballs?
You know how they made the
joke about... I can recite the movie Spaceballs.
The Spaceballs merchandise.
Merchandising.
Yeah, Spaceballs needs the flamethrower. Merchandise. Just merchandise everything.
Yeah. No, yeah. I could recite that movie.
Active roster provisions, as I said, the 40-man rosters in September are being eliminated. 3-batter minimum rule for pitchers. This is going to be the big doozy next year.
Yeah.
And the IL is going to go back up to 15 days from 10 days. But that 3-batter minimum, I think, is going to be very, very noticeable.
I think the 15-day and the 10-day is significant. I mean, it's right, literally 50% of the time that you
CC.
Can...
CC in this situation said, I'm only going to miss one start. It's just 10 days. I'll be back. But now it would have to be 2 starts if he goes and gets his knee drained. I know he's not going to be playing next year, but if that sort of thing happens.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's definitely one. It's easier to manipulate it as well by
and I know, think that's what they found when they moved it to 10 days. They found teams sort of fudging the system.
But I mean, if I'm remembering correctly, the one of the big reasons why they went to this 10-day
it wasn't concussions. It was because they still had a 7-day concussion DL.
Did they not? Is that still does the 7-day?
They got rid of that when they went to the 10-day. They merged it to 10.
Right. So I think that was part of the big reason.
I wonder if we're
going
to get the 7-day concussion back when we get the 15-day.
That's possible.
Which is fine. I mean, I don't want someone trying to play through a concussion. That's asinine.
No, I think that's the reason why they went to 10, though, was because they had that 7, and they're like, oh, let's just
well,
be
you
in the
give
here.
Teams an inch, and they're going to take a mile.
It'll happen every time with anything. They're going to try to find an advantage. Yeah. But no, I got no problems with that. I think
so. They sort of did a soft launch on these rules in 2019 before the hard launch of 2020.
Yeah. No, the 3 batters is the big thing. That's going to be a huge difference.
And September call-ups being eliminated.
Yeah. But the 3 batters, I guess it feels more than it is, because I know we've looked at the numbers in the past.
Yeah,
and
it doesn't
affect
many scenarios. I mean, a lot of pitchers don't pitch 1 or 2 batters, but I think...
But they're also... They can end the inning, right? They can still end the inning,
yes.
So there's that. So it'll feel different.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
But like the Rays are constantly making pitching changes in the middle of innings, so those will be reduced. The Yankees have a bunch of one inning guys. It's not going to affect the Yankees much. It's going to affect more other teams that the Yankees are playing.
The Yankees have very specific Well, who knows? With Boone, I mean, maybe these one-inning guys are two-inning guys, you know? Maybe he feels really good about – maybe some nerd is telling him that the fastball was moving at a significant velocity with the spin rate, so that we're going to keep him in for another inning because I think it will play over the next three batters.
That's a good nerd voice, Scott.
Thanks.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Like I said, special episode on Tuesday as you guys are heading back to work from the long weekend. Check it out with Robert Flores. It was a lot of fun to talk to him and check out his show on MLB Central's 10 a.m. Wednesday live from the stadium. Scott, any last words?
If David Hill is starting the game on Monday against the San Diego Padres, I think he should buzz Manny Machado first at bat.
Because if we lose David Hale to suspension,
who gives a rat's
ass? Who really cares?
Let's throw up and in. Let's get this thing going. You want to bring on the circus? Let's bring on the circus, baby.
Those are some hell of a last words. God, I love it. We'll talk to you guys Thursday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.